Okay. My name is Brian Tokar, and I'm with the biotechnology project at the Institute for Social Ecology in Vermont. And we're here today with a number of our speakers who are based close to the Bay Area, who will be participating in the teach-in this weekend to reclaim the commons and protest the biotechnology industry convention that's coming to San Francisco starting on Sunday. As many people know, we've been involved in doing counter events to the biotech industry convention since 1999, and we've every year brought together knowledgeable people from all around the world to counter some of the myths of biotechnology, the claims that genetically engineered foods are needed to feed the world, the myth that biotech medicine is going to cure all our diseases, the idea that we need to rely on biotechnology for defense against biological weapons. All of these are ideas that have been manipulated by this industry and by the corporations that will be in San Francisco starting on Sunday in order to divert attention, to divert essential financial resources from real human needs, from the kind of research and the kind of care that allows people to feed themselves, that allows for more positive approaches to dealing with our medical needs, particularly preventative medicine and public health areas that have been undermined by the diversion of resources to biotechnology, and many other issues. The theme of reclaiming the commons is one that's also central to this event, and we'll be talking about that over the course of this session. So let me start by introducing Anuradha Mittal, who was the former co-director of Food First and now has an organization called the Oakland Institute.
I would just emphasize on the point that though this gathering is taking place in the Bay Area, the decisions and policies and research that is being conducted by the biotech companies has an impact internationally. And Reclaim the Commons and the week-long events that are organized by the civil society, they basically reflect not just actions of the Bay Area activists, but really the resistance which is garnering support internationally. On one hand, we have seen UN agencies, including Food and Agriculture Organization, trumpeting and kind of hailing this technology as a big boon for third world countries. On the other hand, bluffing people that people in Angola and Sudan and Zimbabwe and in Zambia and India have rejected GM food aid. And what people in these countries are saying is very similar to what the communities in Mendocino have said. And the message is loud and clear that what is not good for Mendocino is no longer good for communities in the third world. So the efforts that we're going to see in the next week-long activities by activists from around the world and people like Brian who've come from Vermont, it is really to show solidarity with this resistance around the world. And yes, corporations have managed to buy up regulatory agencies. Yes, they have managed to buy up our government officials and the Bush administration. However, as the stock market reflects, as county after county in U.S. gets ready to adopt measures banning cultivation of GM crops, it becomes really obvious that the world is saying no and saying that we see through your myths. And also the challenges being put out that biotech will not just not feed the world, but in fact it is increasing hunger as we find the research dollars being put just in biotech research instead of focusing on alternatives and sustainable agroecological alternatives that might improve people's access to food and to food producing resources.
We also have Anne-Christine Dedeschi, who's an HIV science journalist and the executive director of WEACT-X, which is Women's Equity and Access to Care and Treatment.
Good morning. What I was interested in with this conference was really discussing the issue of pharmaceutical research and development and how we are trying to essentially develop medicine for essential diseases. I think the issue that we're facing in the United States and what we're facing globally is the fact that right now we have market-based medicine, and that as long as we have that, we're not able to develop products for diseases that really reach the bulk of people who are poor and who rely on the public health systems in most countries. So I think that AIDS, it really provides a very interesting window to look at this. One of the things that interested me to talk about here is the fact that really medicine in this country is something that is essentially an economic issue. It's the market is driven by what we can sort of afford, and as a result, you have medicine that is not developed for most people in terms of what's going on in the rest of the world. Malaria drugs and other types of drugs are languishing. There is no research and development for them. But I also think that it's important to look at the real political battle that's going on, which has been around patents and monopolies. It's not by accident that medicine is treated as a commodity. It's governed by the economic laws that are governing other types of commodities, which is all, at this point, a big fight that's happening in the World Trade Organization. And so I think that looking at the issues of the patents and monopolies, how the U.S. is beginning now to use bilateral trade in order to sort of block countries from getting access to affordable medicine. And then I just want to make one last point to really show you that the synergy that's happening now in terms of the privatization of medicine and these agendas is that in the most recent bill that was proposed and is now being implemented by the Bush administration, which is the Global AIDS Bill, there's a last-minute clause that mandated that genetically modified food be used in any food aid programs that are going to be within that. So you really see that there's this kind of synergy now between the biotech industry that's producing food and genetically modified food and seeking new markets, and the big pharma companies that are looking at health as an avenue in which to also be able to essentially make profit. My interest this weekend is in talking about alternatives that are emerging to that. Alternatives both in terms of private and public partnership, how the government can be trying to work with private groups that are needing to develop medicines for diseases. And issue that I think is most critical in all of this is the fact that we need processes to give transparency so that the general public here and in other countries can know how the drugs are developed, what they truly cost, what the demand is, and what the agendas are, so that we have a degree of control and ultimately that we begin to get, you know, the kinds of drugs at affordable prices. Because all of these diseases, whether they be cancer or AIDS or others, really can be treated for a fraction of the money that we have. And if we begin to make that available and people know about it, I think that we have a chance of beginning to turn things around. Thank you.
Next, we have Marcy Darnofsky, who's the co-director of the Center for Genetics and Society in Oakland.
Thanks, Brian. The Center for Genetics and Society focuses on human biotechnologies. And what we're seeing as we look at the biotech industry is that having failed to convince many farmers and consumers around the world, and indeed having failed to convince many governments that genetically modified crops have any real benefit, although they still do hope that these genetically modified crops will benefit the company's bottom lines and give them control of the market. But having failed so much in that endeavor, a lot of the focus of biotechnology companies is now turning to the human biotechnologies. And we're now being asked to trust the biotech industry, to believe that it has the best interests of the public's health in mind, that the products and projects of the biotech industry are the best way to alleviate suffering and disease around the world. Now, we have no doubt that there are individuals that many biotech scientists, and for that matter, many biotech CEOs, may be motivated by a desire to help other people. And it probably is true that some products of the biotech industry will be useful and praiseworthy medical tools. But we think it's very prudent to keep in mind that whatever the motivations of individual researchers, the purpose of the biotech industry is to capture markets and returns on private investment. And we think it prudent also to keep in mind that if the bottom line is to be, as it should be, public health needs and individuals' overall health, we should not focus on or prioritize privately controlled biomedical technologies that are often unattainably expensive for many of the world's people, that instead we need to be prioritizing basic health care, preventive medicine, and public and environmental health. These are the health measures that are affordable by societies that make them a priority, and that's what we need to be doing. The biotech industry relies very heavily on our desire for good health to buy approval or acquiescence for its agenda. And whenever they find it necessary, they ramp up their promises of medical breakthroughs and medical miracles in order to fend off what the industry considers inconvenient interference with whatever agenda it decides to set. And I'm going to give you just one comment as an example of that, how that works. It's from James Watson, the Nobel laureate who helped deduce the structure of DNA. And as usual, he talks very bluntly about how the internal strategic processes of the biotech industry works. So a few years ago, he was discussing how to win public and governmental approval for efforts to develop what's often referred to as designer baby technology. And he said this. He said, "Don't ask Congress to approve it. Just ask them for the money to help their constituents. That's what they want. We can talk principles forever. But what the public actually wants is not to be sick. And if we help them not to be sick, they'll be on our side." So what you see in that comment is the strategy of the biotech industry to promise these medical miracles as a way to deflect any kind of healthy skepticism about whether their products and their projects are the way to go to protect health. And the latest medical miracle that they're promising is now stem cells. Now, the Center for Genetics and Society actually supports research on embryonic stem cells, and we criticize the Bush administration's restrictions on embryonic stem cell research. That the Bush policy is motivated by the desire to pander to the religious right wing and its belief that embryos should not be used for medical research at all. However, the biotech industry in California has qualified for the November ballot a measure that would provide $3 billion, $3 billion with a B, of public money. It would mandate the issuance of taxpayer bonds. And this is to give basically a fund for biomedical researchers to do whatever they want to with. The initiative should be, we think, opposed even by people who are most enthusiastically in favor of stem cell research, because it's a terrible precedent, a terrible way to set public policy in terms of health care and medical research. It has provisions that actually wall off any kind of public oversight and hands over control of this mandated $3 billion in public money to private researchers. It's the wrong way to go.
Next, we have Inga Olson, who's the program director at Tri-Valley Communities Against the Radioactive Environment, based near here in Livermore, California.
People in the Bay Area need to be concerned about the building of an advanced biowarfare agent facility in Livermore at the Nuclear Weapons Laboratory. The co-location of a biodefense lab at a nuclear weapons facility is a proliferation risk. Other nations are going to look at what we're doing, and they're going to start to believe that they have to do something similar. We're on the verge of another biological arms race. In addition, there are serious health and safety risks involved in this biowarfare agent facility in Livermore. The FBI has called Livermore Lab a potential terrorist target. Recently, Spencer Abraham, the Secretary of Energy, called for a reassessment of whether certain special nuclear materials should be housed at Livermore Lab due to the security vulnerabilities. When the security of Livermore Lab is in question, it is not the time to bring biowarfare agents into this deadly mix. The massive expansion and funding of biodefense labs all across the country came in the wake of the 2001 anthrax attacks. The Bush administration pushed billions in funding through Congress without adequate information, analysis, and virtually no public debate. The importance of adequate information, open debate, is underscored by the recent revelations about the faulty weapons of mass destruction information that led to the invasion of Iraq. The importance of adequate information, open debate, is important to members of our coalition, and for this reason, to avoid another massive catastrophic problem regarding biodefense labs, we're calling for a moratorium on the building and operating of any new biodefense lab across the country until a comprehensive national assessment has been conducted to see how many, if any, advanced biowarfare agent facilities are needed. With the out-of-control expansion of biolabs, this means hundreds, if not thousands, of people are going to have access to these deadly pathogens. These people are going to be working with these pathogens. Some of them, in many cases, are genetically modifying some of the most dangerous biological substances on Earth. They're going to be aerosolizing these substances, which means making them airborne, which makes them all the more dangerous. They're going to be exposing small animals in animal testing to these agents. Biological select agents are those agents that are most closely associated with weaponization. This increase in labs, in people, and in pathogens is, we believe, decreasing our national security, not increasing our national security. Coalition members are advocating for openness and transparency, that those regulations... offensive domain. Finally, the free flowing of biodefense dollars needs to be redistributed to a primary preventative approach that will address man-made and naturally arising infectious diseases.
Next we have David Kahn, who's with Books Not Bars, and that's a project of the Ella Baker for which is a project of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights here in San Francisco.
Well, I'm here today because on June 7th, Reclaim the Commons and the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights are co-sponsoring an action to call attention to the fact that tax dollars are not only supporting torture in Iraq and abroad, but also torture and really severe violations of human rights here within California, specifically within the prison system and, most disturbingly within the youth prison system, the California Youth Authority. And on the surface, it may not be totally clear how biotechnology and prison reform and prison transformation are related, but we recognize that actually the same dynamics that happen in geographic third world countries happen to third world communities within the United States. Those dynamics really is typified by money and resources coming out of the things that we need for sustainable and healthy communities, such as education, healthcare, housing, and sustainable environmental and agricultural practices. And those resources actually consistently get put into prisons, into policing, into the military, and into the industries that are support punishment. And we know that in order to address the struggle for global justice, we need to support justice movements locally, and that in order for us to succeed locally in winning social justice, we need to support the global justice movement. So this Monday, we'll be highlighting the fact that at the same time that the Bush administration, which is the most right-wing administration we've had in this country this century, or even since the last century, at the same time that they're moving forward to prosecute guards who have tortured and abused Iraqis, in California, guards who beat CYA wards after they were restrained. And actually, the CYA system, which has documented a lot of the same types of torture and abuse, such as, locking people up for 23 hours a day for extended periods of time, not addressing severe mental health needs, sicking dogs on children as a form of punishment, and that California isn't moving aggressively to stop those practices, so that the state of California is actually coming down to the right of the Bush administration when it comes to human rights, and California taxpayers are actually supporting institutionalized torture and abuse of our children. The California Youth Authority has a mandate to rehabilitate, but it's failing miserably at that. Over 90% of wards who are released from the Youth Authority wind up incarcerated and institutionalized again within 3 years. We know that that's unacceptable, and that the ideology that says profits are more important than people, and that if you don't fit into the system, whether you're a local farmer or a young person on the streets of Oakland or San Francisco, that you're disposable, that can't be allowed to stand, and our survival depends on fighting back and really achieving justice at home and abroad.
I'd like to just wrap up by saying a little bit about the positive message of the events this weekend, the broad coalition of groups from throughout the Bay Area and around the country that have come together to put on this week of events around the biotech convention, have chosen the theme of reclaiming the commons. The idea of the commons is perhaps unfamiliar to many. The commons are the air, the water, the soil, the knowledge and culture that we share as a human community. These are qualities that until very recently in human history were not owned by anybody. They were not considered to be able to be owned by anybody. In the last many years, we've seen the appropriation of these qualities, their absorption into the world of commodities, things that are to be bought and sold in the commercial marketplace, and now the biotechnology industry is doing that with our genes. They're trying to appropriate everything that's alive into the sphere of commercial products. This, of course, is a process that's been furthered by the WTO and the other major international financial institutions. And as we carry on this series of events in San Francisco this week, we're going to be speaking to a different kind of world where we can once again share the fruits of our labor and the earth and move toward a much more cooperative vision of the kind of society that we want to live in. On Wednesday, there will be a day of eco-actions highlighting efforts to create ecological alternatives in Bay Area neighborhoods. And throughout these events, we'll be talking very systematically about the alternatives to the dismal vision of the world that has been imposed upon us by transnational corporations, including the biotechnology companies.